How's it going, and welcome to episode 36 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. Of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by Kevin Hasting, who of course can and should be followed on the Twitter himself at HastingKevin. Kevin, you are recording this live from Arizona Fall League during Baseball HQ's First Pitch Arizona. I'd be lying if I wasn't a little jealous. And I said this on Twitter. I'm like, I won't say that very much for people who spend time in Arizona. Sorry to those people in Arizona. Last time I was there in Arizona, it was like during spring break in like 2003, I think, or something like that. We drove from San Diego to Arizona to Vegas to LA, and that was fun. That was probably the longest period of time I ever thought I was going to spend in Arizona. And so far it is. Hopefully I'll join you next year at First Pitch. But how has Arizona been treating you so far?
Absolutely amazing. As I said right before we started, I try to temper my excitement because I know you guys wish you were here, but it's so hard. It's been absolutely amazing. Not just the panels, the information, the games, seeing all the fall league players on the rosters, but it's the conversations that you have with people, and how many people have brought up this podcast. And I'm just flabbergasted at some of the people that not just know about it, but have made comments about actively listening and enjoying it, and it's just overwhelming. So it's been an absolute blast, and still got a day and a half of it left to go.
Yeah, you're telling me a couple of those, and it's definitely humbling. And we appreciate everybody who listens, especially if you're able to get in contact with one of us, like Kevin has the luxury of doing, and talking with them face to face and being able to mention it there. It's amazing to hear. So we appreciate that for sure. Luckily, we've had the chance to have, and if you've listened to last episode, I put together what's been called like a super clip. About half of our interviews with our amazing guests we've had all regular season in the preseason last March. We just had some really great conversations with some really intelligent, smart people. And luckily for us, we get to extend that a little bit into the offseason this year. And we're extremely fortunate to have another amazing voice join us. Derek Rhodes of Baseball Prospectus is here with us to kick things off in the offseason. Derek can and should be followed on the Twitter at JAG_fantasy for his fantasy baseball content, and also at DRHOA3 for his takes regarding injuries and other stuff. Derek focuses on injury data and visualizations over at Baseball Prospectus while regularly dabbling in the best ball game as well. We'll get into his recently completed 2022 best ball draft. And that's not a mock draft, the real draft that Derek and Kevin both took part in later in the show. But for now, I'd just like to thank Derek for taking the time to join us. I know, Derek, like me, you are stuck at home with the kiddos rather than basking in the sun of Arizona. How's that going for you?
It's going okay. I'll tell you, the worst part is I had flights booked. I had my ticket purchased. It was happening. And then we had some issues. I got kids in school, and my wife's work, she doesn't have a real flexible work schedule. And so it was like, it looked like maybe we were going to have some scheduling issues. And so I was like, I better refund while I can, which is just, I'm like, just stabbing myself every time I like someone's post, but I keep searching for First Pitch Arizona updates. Like, I can't stop. It's just torture at this point. But
it's your own personal torture, right?
Yes, exactly. Like, I'm just crying at home. But no, I'm happy to be here. This is great. This kind of helps scratch the itch a little bit. That's my first podcast of the off season, so I'm very excited to be here.
Awesome. Yeah, next year, you know, I'm hoping I'll be able to, you know, pick that cherry for myself. I haven't been. It will be my 40th birthday next September, so I'm hoping I can spin that into a proper birthday party.
Pointing your due. That's how exactly. Like, it's time for that big free agency First Pitch contract, if you will. Now that you played out your service time, I think there it's time.
I like it. Big analogy guy. I like that one. I'm going to go with that one for now. All right, Derek, like I mentioned, you do a lot of work over at Baseball Perspective with following injuries across baseball, putting them in amazing graphics that are really easy to read and just easy to visualize, hence visualizations. So I want to talk a little bit about injuries in general and the stuff that you have seen, the stuff that you can take away from the work that you've done. I want to see how, Kevin, I want to talk to you also about how you utilize that injury information to prep for your drafts? Like how much do you rely on certain information? How much stock should we be putting into injury notes that come out this time of year versus, you know, a draft season? And how can you, maybe you can even take advantage of some of the things that we're not hearing about, like we're not hearing about what Fernando Tatis Jr. is doing with his shoulder at the moment. But there are this, like, we hear a lot of stuff about injuries throughout years about whether or not they do certain things, if they linger. We hear, of course, the, you know, injury prone tag can be put on players for any various amount of reasons. So I want to get your opinion on some of those assumptions that we make and whether or not you found that there is any legitimacy to them. The first one I hear a lot, and I always think of Marcus Thames happening to him when he broke his hammy and he came back, and the idea that the assumption is that any hand injuries, especially like hammy bones, stuff like that, will end up sapping power. I think this happened when Matt Olson went down as well somewhat recently, but he came back and obviously continued to belt the ball. Have you seen any truth behind that in general, or is that more of a wives' tale?
No, I think actually I wrote down Matt Olson because I think he's a great example. Look, we know, you know, so there's things, you have general rules, but the reality is we sometimes apply them too widely. And just the hammock bone is a perfect example. That's an injury that happens, doesn't happen as frequently as we think it does. I think, number one, they've developed some bats that are less likely to put pressure on the hammy bone, so you don't have that injury specifically. But even then, we're always getting better about coming back from injury. Teams are always developing new strategies. So like Matt Olson, 2019, he breaks his hammy bone. It was late March. They were in Japan. And he came back like the second week of May and hit 36 home runs for the rest of the season. But everybody and their mother was saying, look, it's going to sap his power. It's going to affect him. And the reality is there are a lot of times we do see hand injuries can hurt a player. But most of the time it's because players are playing, like, so you see players play through hand injuries, or they're rushing back, trying to get back into action. And maybe they're just not trusting their hand. So it's hard to, like, across the board say, oh yeah, hand injuries are always going to sap your power, because it's so player dependent. So I always try and be cautious of making these kind of like uniform statements like that. And that's a great example because people say it constantly, but I'm not sure. I think generally, yeah, it can do that. But each player, the way they recover, how long they recover, like that comes into it as well.
When you see something like this, Kevin, like when this comes out, especially in the Matt Olson situation, you can reach back to remembering maybe how you did handle it, if you had to handle it at that time. Like early on in the season, like how much stock are you putting in to those types of, when you see that a hand injury in general, maybe be handmade or some other part of your hand, how much stock are you putting into that when making a decision when to cut or free agent, like to fill that spot through free agency, or if it's in the offseason when you're drafting these type of guys?
Matt Olson was an interesting, it was different than what we've seen before, because Eric said we were done drafting. It was when they were in Japan for that series that opened the season. He was already on rosters. And so typically we're hearing the big topic here has been on Twitter, everything with what Phil Dessau did this season, and our biggest focus in almost every conversation that we're having right now is at-bats, maximizing at-bats, cutting players and not wasting a roster spot. And I'm sure that if this were to happen this coming season, people would drop Matt Olson in that situation. The people that held on to him were, I don't know how you can't be shocked at the production you got. If you kept him on your roster, it was amazing that he came back and had the season he had so quickly. I think timing of these things is important to me. If a guy has an off season to recover, whole different story. So I guess I'm a long-winded way of saying it's a case-by-case basis.
Sure. And you guys both talked about like how players come back. And Derek, you alluded to this. That really has a lot to do with the team that they're playing for, the training staff, the medical staff that they employ. And whether or not, obviously, it also is do with the type of player you have. So if you have a Max Scherzer type of player, he's going to want to get back on the mound tomorrow, regardless of whether or not he's a broken hip. Like, he doesn't matter. So I wanted to know if you had noticed any particular teams that handle either certain types of injuries better than others, not forcing players back early so they're playing through it. Or on the flip side, teams and training staff specifically, and obviously training staffs can change and they do change throughout the course of a decade period of time for a team based on results. If there's a certain team or training staff, or even if there's a specific person out there that you've noticed that kind of stands out in either a really positive or regularly negative way, that maybe we should be keeping an eye on players that get hurt for that organization and how that's going to be handled.
Yeah, I've been doing this for about 3 years, and I've only been at Baseball Prospectus 1 year. I'm still crash coursing in some of the nuance of the team specific stuff in the industry. You build some of that over time. There's some guys who I've talked to who do have those connections to like actual organizations, and they're talking to training staff, and you know, they have a much better kind of feel of the pulse. But what I see is that there are certain types of teams that it's a combination of factors. One, it's the type of players they seem to sign and draft and trade for. And number two, it's the approach that they have. And these aren't going to shock anybody. These are two that are negative. The Mets and Padres are pretty consistently at the bottom of any kind of health metric you would have, whether it's days lost or number of injuries, number of IL stints. Like, they've been consistently at the bottom for a couple of years now. And that's not new news to Padres or Mets fans. unfortunately, I talk to them a lot. They're heartbroken. And with both of them, it's not just pitchers. And that's the thing, that when I see a team that is struggling to keep their hitters healthy, because we know pitching is hard on the body, you know, elbows break. But when you see a team that's consistently having issues with hamstrings, consistently having issues with hips or like obliques, like, you go, maybe there's something going on systemic to that organization. So those are two that you see pretty consistently. Now, on the positive side, one thing, and this year was one of the worst years we've seen from a hamstring standpoint in the last, it was bad for all injuries. Hamstring is one that is relatively common, so it really jumped out. But I was looking at the Mariners in the last 4 years have had one hamstring strain, which is, now I don't know if that's, hey, they do something specific where they're focusing on hamstrings and they're preventing it, or if it's sometimes you can just have a really good stretch and maybe they've had a lot of hip issues or calf issues, you know.
That was Jake Fraley, right?
Yeah, Fraley was the hamstring. Yep. Which is wild when you think about it, like, to just go that many years. It's hard to examine these teams because you don't always know what's going on with the players. You don't know the goal of the team. They may be putting guys on the IL to prevent or debilitate longer term injuries. So it almost looks like things are worse, but maybe they're preventing other injuries. Some teams that I know, or at least one team that has thought well of from my understanding, is Cleveland. They've historically been pretty good at keeping players healthy. This season was an aberration for them in that regard. It did not work that well this year, especially their pitchers. So I would say there's just a couple staffs I worry about, a couple teams that I go, oof, you know, with the way the Mets handled DeGrom, I think everybody was kind of like, this doesn't seem great. Like, just the approach, not just the results, but the process.
Well, apparently the Mets no longer employ training staff. They just have magicians and warlocks and they can magically heal elbows and other ligaments and what have you. So you have that going for them, which is nice. Kevin, when you hear this too, when you hear the no surprise teams that they're talking about, like the Mets and the Padres, how much does that play into you ranking your draftees or your possible draftees? You love, for example, like if you love Tatis, we're going to talk to him a little bit later, and you've got the 1, 2, or 3 pick in a draft, and is this going to push down his stock, if you will, at the beginning of drafts in your situation, or are you not, especially that high in a draft, are you not worried about that as much? And because, you know, what was it last year? Of the top 15 ADP, I think 8 or 9 of them spent a good chunk of time on the IL, at least a small chunk. So how much did that play into you ranking your players when you're going into drafts?
It hasn't in the past, but it will going forward. Specific teams. Injuries, of course, we've looked at. I'm very concerned specifically for a guy about Tatis, because now since the season's ended, we haven't heard anything about going forward. Throughout the season, we thought maybe he was getting surgery in the off season. If that was going to happen, you would think they'd have done that in the past couple of weeks.
Yeah.
and we haven't heard anything. I think a lot of people are assuming that he's just going to try to rehab and strengthen it and fly. And if that's the case, I'm very concerned. Because I made a mistake this season in multiple leagues when, in past years, I was avoiding Christian Yelich as a top 5 pick because I was concerned about his back. And this year, because he was falling to the end of the first round, I had him on multiple rosters. And what I realized is the concern I have wasn't just worth a few picks of a discount. I needed rounds of a discount. And as we talk about our best ball draft that we did later, I have a couple of guys that we're going to talk about were injuries that I drafted in this league, but much later rounds. I got sure. rounds of discount, not a few picks. And so that's where I'm at on Tatis. I don't think I can use a first round pick on him because of the concerns I have with the shoulder.
You can listen to a future On the Corner podcast where we'll be breaking down. Kevin and I did our pitcher list 2022 mock draft, 12 team head to head style. And I picked Tatis with a third overall pick. And ultimately I probably just maybe it was because it was a mock. Maybe because it wasn't, you know, a quote real draft, but maybe it was just also because I'm putting a lot of trust into Tatis for saying the things he said about quote his own body. Like he knows his body. He's been dealing with this for a long time. He came back twice when it pretty much everybody and their mother thought he'd be done for the season at any given point. And he still came back and he was still like MVP caliber Tatis. So he's definitely an interesting subject to see how it ends up going, especially throughout the offseason and into the beginning of next season. But let's move on to a different kind of injury. And Derek, this goes into, when I asked you about hamates, the dreaded oblique is something that comes up all the time, unfortunately. And I think one of the bigger ones that a good chunk of leagues had to deal with last year was George Springer, obviously hurting his oblique in spring training. And then just not sure if he was ever going to come back, comes back for like 2 or 3 days. Does great. That's a home run in his first game. And he came back, goes right back on the IL. And it kind of seemed like it was an ongoing thing throughout the season. And that's what you hear all the time is that obliques linger. Now, do they actually linger, or do they only linger when you're trying to force yourself back quicker than you're allowed to, your sure. body will allow you to do it? Or it doesn't matter if it's fully healed. Is that one of those things that just like, it's never fully healed? Now, I also want to preface this. You put this in your Twitter bio. I understand, everybody should understand, you're not an actual doctor. Oh, yeah,
not a doctor. That is really good to say. Like, I know my handle has like the DR in it, and it's just part of, it's my initials.
It's just your name.
And so,
yeah.
yeah. And so it's like, I do. Yeah. That, thank you for saying that, because I do want to clarify. I am not a doctor. I am just a guy who tracks injury stuff. I'm learning about it. I love to read from doctors, and I'm happy to share that knowledge that I learned, but I don't diagnose people. No, I can't fix them.
but what you do is you look yeah. at trends that are happening yes. based yeah. on the injuries that are reported. Again, you're handcuffed by what you learn through the media and through teams say, and managers and mm-hmm. what have you, players. But with that being said,
sure.
have you noticed any correlation between obliques like sticking around for a long period of time, whether they be careers or just single season?
I haven't looked at them over multiple seasons. I should say I have, not specifically, but when I did look, the leg injuries were more of a multi-season issue for hitters than obliques. But what we do see with obliques is they can be challenging to recover from. So what you see a lot is guys, okay, I'm out. I think we saw this. Colton Wong, I think, had this where he like tweaked it. And they're like, you know what? We're just going to rest for a couple of days. We're going to let him play through it. And then he ends up on the IL. And a lot of that is, it is hard. I think it's, you can think you're back and then one swing and all of a sudden you've re-injured it or you've worsened the injury. So obliques do seem to be really challenging. You have a lot of setbacks. It takes a long time to fully recover. I don't think crossing over seasons, I don't worry about that unless we see like a pattern, unless we see, like, hey, this guy's got lots of multiple chronic, years of obliques right. issue, then it's more probably maybe a training issue than it is a specific injury. But I will say what you can see happen is what did happen with George Springer. So George Springer goes on the IL with an oblique, comes back and then goes, like, he actually tweaked his quad while he was recovering from the oblique. And this is something we see constantly. So you're recovering from one injury, maybe you're compensating, you're doing something a little bit different, and all of a sudden you see an injury in sometimes an unrelated body part. And then he tweaks his quad, he comes back, and he ends up back on the IL because of the quad, like just mm-hmm. a week later. And then I was out for a long time. So if you are concerned about something like that, I think we, and the way, what the actual info for that is, guy has an oblique, do not take the minimum and go, he's coming back. And when somebody says it's a 6 to 8 week injury, if it's a bad oblique strain, or if it's it's a mild, it's going to be 2 to 3 weeks. Don't think, okay, I can count on him in 2 weeks. You probably need to say, maybe it's more like a 3 to 4 week injury. Because in my experience, you're better off if you're surprised when they come back early than planning mm-hmm. for them to come back and then being gone another 2 or 3 weeks.
Yeah, I will say I hate when that happens. I love hate when that happens, when a player comes back early, especially if I have picked up somebody who I've fallen in love with on my team. I'm like, I really don't want to drop him now. But obviously, I'm happy to have Springer back or whoever that might be. Mm-hmm. Kevin, I know you've dealt with, as a Royals fan, you've dealt with a notable oblique here or there.
I have a question for Derek. I know where you're going, because with Adalberto Mondesi, that he came back from one oblique issue and injured his oblique on the other side. So I'm curious, is that like a compensation thing where he might have been favoring one side to injure the other? And also, very interesting, your comment that you're not worried about oblique season to season. So everybody, it seems, is really out on Mondesi for next season because he's got the injury prone label now. Sounds to me like Derek might not be too worried about at least more oblique issues.
Yeah, I'm not worried about more oblique issues, but he's a guy who seems to have, I was just looking him up real quick. It's not just, he's a guy who seems to find a lot of different ways to, he's a guy who plays hard. He's a really athletic guy. He's had a few different issues all over his body, quite frankly. And so he's a guy you just worry, there seems to be maybe some durability, some training things. But as far as like injuring one side after injuring the other, that's, you're talking compensation. You're talking a player is trying to get back right there. And maybe they're under training the side that they need to rehab. Or they are over pushing it and they've shifted their mechanics somehow. And so I think that's the kind of stuff that we see constantly. And obliques seem to be one that just, they cause a lot of, and I do think it's because it is hard to tell when you are fully recovered. And no player, when they feel good, they're like, oh, I'm ready to come back. Mm-hmm. But maybe they're not quite ready. As opposed to like broken bone, like it's not your choice. Like they look at it, they look at the x-ray, say, okay, you can go back. But you have some of these, especially the torso kind of core injuries, I think it is harder to know when you're ready. But yeah, I am still concerned about Mondesi. The guy just hasn't been able to finish a full season. And at some point you go, I don't like to use the injury prone, but there is something preventing him from putting that full season of work in. And you wonder what that is and you don't like to see it.
Yeah, it seems like an infield version of Byron Buxton.
That's exactly what I was going to say.
Yeah, like you just, a different injury every other month or every other season, really. And it doesn't seem like there's any connection between the two, except for maybe in this oblique situation where it's a compensation issue. But Kevin, I personally, Mondesi, another player I drafted pretty late though in this mock draft that we just did, but do you have concern about the comments I think Matheny said toward the end of the season where they mentioned Mondesi just probably isn't the type of guy that we can play every day moving forward into next season, especially as a Royals fan, not to mention obviously having guys like Bobby Witt Jr. coming up, Nicky Lopez playing really well toward the second half of the season. I would have more concern in those comments from his manager combined with his injury history. Do you have any thoughts on that?
I do. The at-bat thing is huge, and especially when we're dealing with weekly lineups or even when we can change our lineups in NFBC formats on Friday. Maximizing at-bats, it is like Derek Van Riper told us a couple weeks ago, he pays a lot of attention to that, but not enough. And I think that's where I'm at. I really try to maximize at-bats, and I still need to be better at it. So I think Mondesi is going to play third base, but I think he's going to get more off days than you would typically want from your starting third baseman. And so that is the issue, that even if he is healthy, he's going to get more off days than you'd like.
I think he's a guy who could be format dependent too. Like, so the main event, that style of league, you have short benches. Every spot needs to be contributing. But if you're in like a 50 round draft and hold and you can have some depth to make up for when he's out, those weeks he's healthy, he can be one of the best players in baseball. So I think your format could really drive his value. Your ability to, if you've got deep benches, if you have IL spots, I think he's a much more viable player than say in like the main event or that format where it's you got 7-8 bench spots and that's it. And you, they all have to be doing something for you.
Yeah. And to echo that even further, in a daily moves league, if you're in a Yahoo league where he's available at third and short, he's obviously going to keep both of those position eligibilities. In actually most formats, I believe he played plenty of both last year to qualify for into next year. But in a daily moves league, Mondesi would be a lot, I'd be a lot more tempted to grab Mondesi maybe a round or two earlier than in a weekly moves league where I have a little bit of depth that like, hey, if I know he's starting and I know he's anywhere near the top of the lineup, I know what he can do. And if he's in the game, he can do it. If he's not in the game, I can put him on my bench that next day. I know I'm trying to cut down on how many daily moves leagues I have, so it might not be that many that I find myself with him. But in the ones that I do have, I'd be more interested in him than in a weekly league or even in a NFBC format where you're switching out your hitters for the weekends. So we touched on it. Let's elaborate on this a little bit more. Kevin, like how much injury risk are you willing to take in drafts, especially in the NFBC? We talk about this. If there's no IL spots, there's a very limited bench, whether you're in the main event or a 12 team OC or anything like that, it's pretty much, it's the same roster sizes. How much injury risk are you willing now? And is it different than what you went into 2021 thinking versus stashes that you might want to hold on to if you want to draft Bobby Witt and stash him until he gets called up, or Adley Rutschman, or any of the other prospects we expect to see at least, you know, by the All-Star break next year, versus the guys you don't trust to stay healthy past week three, or the guys who are going into the season with already the little red suitcase on next to their name?
Yeah, I don't want to stash any injured player. That the bench spots in those NFBC formats are too valuable when we're talking about, I keep bringing it up, maximizing at-bats. I need to have options. I need to have players that are going to be available to me on a weekly basis in those spots if the schedule is favorable to put them in my lineup. And like I was saying with Christian Yelich, if I'm concerned about a player's injury, I've learned I need a bigger discount than what I got with him. There are some guys with injury concerns, if I'm getting them late enough, they're worth a chance. They have the talent. Like Derek said with Mondesi, when he's on the field, he's one of the best players in baseball. It depends on the discount we're getting.
Derek, when you go into a draft, and if I'm not mistaken, you pretty much only do best balls at this point,
yeah, correct? Pretty much exclusively, yeah.
How much stock are you putting into a player who you think isn't injured now but could be injured soon? Like a Mondesi or a Buxton, mm-hmm. or what have you, or versus ones that are already injured, but you're hoping or expecting them to get through it and maybe come back, yeah, in a couple of weeks, get it out of the way early in the season versus somebody who could be out later on in the season.
I don't like drafting injured players, and that has changed. I think I used to be more tolerant of drafting players who were hurt, who I felt comfortable with them coming back. I've been burned a couple of times in the last few years. And so I've tried to really push back against kind of my inclination to like wish the best. I think that's, I'm an optimistic. So like, I want to hope for the best as an injury person, that can be a bad idea. One thing that is challenging though, and I'll try not to soapbox too hard on this. We use the term injury risk a lot, and there's something there that we know that there's a chance that any player could be hurt. And there's a chance, we feel pretty confident, there's a higher chance of some players getting hurt than others. But what we're not good at is quantifying that, in my opinion, trying to test that. There's not really a lot of, we have tons of projection systems out there that are, you can go back and verify the accuracy of them and go, okay, this is how well this one did this year. This is how well this one did. We don't really have that in the injury space. There's not somebody saying, hey, I'm going to put a percent chance of injury on every single player, and then we could go test that model. But we sometimes talk as if that's how it is. And so I try and just have a level of cautiousness about players. I try and be skeptical. I'm willing to take two drafts on players that people think, hey, this guy isn't going to play a full season. If I feel like the price reflects that, if the draft day acquisition cost for any player is reflective of them missing a quarter of the season and only playing 75, then that makes sense. Then as someone who's drafting, you would go, look, the price is baked in and this is a player who's going to play well. And that's a player that you would want on your team. I think sometimes what people do is they double penalize. So like a player, hey, we think this guy's likely to get hurt, so he's discounted. Like, Stanton is a great example, right? Like, I think Stanton's going to get hurt. If you guaranteed Stanton would be healthy, he'd be like, what, top two round? He'd be an elite player.
Yeah, sure.
And so the reason he goes later is because we don't feel that guarantee is there. So don't double count the injury risk, but I am definitely, I need a discount on a player if I think that they have a higher chance of getting injured. And a lot of times I might just say, well, this player, I just won't draft, especially because of the format I play, which is, look, you can't, no ad drops. If he's hurt, he's on your team for the rest of the year.
Sure. Absolutely. I think something that I've done for probably too long is I've seen current injured players the same way as I look at prospects I think are going to come up, and they're taking up that same spot on my bench, and I have a limit depending on the league format of how many I'm willing to take on. And everybody talks about how you can only stash a prospect for so long. The injury guy really should be the same thing, because in my mind, you don't know if they're going to come back at 100%. You don't know what they're going to provide, at least with a prospect. Again, you don't know how they're going to adapt to the major leagues. We've seen that with Jared Kelenic and Vlad's first year and et cetera. But I think it's the aura or whatever of knowing that I've got this guy like Bobby Witt Jr. I'm probably going to draft him as many places as a lot of different places this coming year, just because where you probably can get him, you just have it in your head. He could be a 30-30 guy. Like, he did 30-30 in AAA or between AA, AAA. He could do that. With an injured guy, I guess I'm more worried, or I've been burned more often by them than I have by elite prospects coming up. I also don't have the same expectations with those prospects as I do with those injured players, because you've already seen what they've done. You've seen what they can do, what Stanton can do when he's healthy, what, you know, Buxton can do when he's healthy. And I think I have to kind of balance that a little bit differently. Kevin, do you feel any differently about any of that, or do you think you weigh one over the other, or do you see them as equals?
No, what I was thinking about as you were saying that is to add on to it is the things that linger. And an example this year was Carlos Carrasco. We kept being told he was a week away, and so we didn't drop him. In hindsight, we should have dropped him in April, sure, or not even drafted him. But we kept being told, yeah, he's throwing, he's going to throw off a mound, we'll see him in a week or two and start a rehab. And it just kept lingering. So if I am starting the season with a guy like that stashed, as I did last season, I've already have issues. So I don't want to start out that way anymore. Mm-hmm. It may happen. A guy gets injured during the season, things might linger, and then we keep being told he's coming back and doesn't. But at least I'm not starting out day one with that issue on my roster.
That's fair. All right, let's talk about some of these players that we could be drafting coming into next year. Maybe a lot of these players, it's not worth looking into as far as draft. You don't expect them to come back. I got a couple pitchers to talk to you guys about, and then a couple hitters. Derek, I'm going to start with you. We'll talk about two former closers. We have Ken Giles, who in theory will be returning hopefully by spring training, and he's with the Mariners. Their bullpen was pretty good toward the end of the season, but he was an elite closer in his heyday. He could come back and regain that spot for the Mariners. I have a feeling that's why he was signed to begin with by the Mariners with their 2-year deal, even having Tommy John. And then we also have Trevor Rosenthal, who is, you know, unsigned, still out there. He's been out all season. And do you feel better about either one of these guys, or are they both just in a bucket where, like, beyond a 50, my 50th pick in a 50 round draft and hold, are either one of these guys worth considering in a normal size draft?
So Ken Giles is coming back from Tommy John. Trevor Rosenthal is coming back from thoracic outlook, TOS. My mouth is one word. He had surgery for thoracic outlet. The worry with TOS surgery is that you're never the same. That, like, it is a much less common surgery than Tommy John. We know the outcomes of a Tommy John. It's a surgery where we as baseball consumers, but also baseball health professionals, here's how you recover from it. Boom. Recovery outcomes are generally pretty good. He has a pretty high likelihood of coming back to something close to what he was before. And I would say he had surgery in September, right at the end of September of 2020. I think that him coming back, whether it be right at the start of the season or a month in or something he should be ready to go. That'll be 14 to 16 months. And we've seen a lot of players come back in that timeline, especially older players who are a little more established. They have less incentive to drag out that recovery, as you see with some of the younger guys. But as far as thoracic outlet, Merrill Kelly is a good example of a positive case of this. He had surgery last year in September and was back for the start of the season. So again, this is the surgery that Trevor Rosenthal had. And Merrill Kelly had a really good season. He played really well. He came back to about the level he was at before. Another guy who didn't, Chris Archer. I guess what I would just say is my certainty with Trevor Rosenthal is much lower.
Kevin, I wonder how you feel about the fact that these guys are coming back from these injuries as relievers, as opposed to the guys that Derek just mentioned between Archer and Kelly, and whether or not you have either more or less trust in a reliever coming back from these type of injuries when you're looking to make spec ads at the end of drafts, looking for a possible closer or what have you.
It's interesting to me that pairing these two guys, because Trevor Rosenthal has had Tommy John surgery in the past. And when he came back, the last thing to come back, and we talk about all the time from Tommy John guys, is command. But Trevor Rosenthal was the extreme. He couldn't throw a strike. When he played for three teams tried to sign him, and he literally couldn't throw a strike. He was walking multiple guys and leaving games without getting an out and six walks. So it's interesting that this is Ken Giles in that situation. Now, typically, if it's not that extreme, to answer your question, I think I'm more comfortable with it being a reliever. Some relievers don't have the greatest command anyway, right, that we're using. So I don't think we typically see as extreme cases as Trevor Rosenthal was. So I to answer your question, I think I want two established closers in most leagues and then take a shot late. I could see that shot being Ken Giles.
I think that, even especially at this point in draft season, I tend to agree with you. Maybe if this was March and we obviously had more information and we see where they were in spring training, I might be less, but I'd be willing to take the risk or the chance now, hoping that you get a hit then maybe later on. All right, I'm going to fly through. We got a couple starters, so we'll get away from the relievers. Kevin, I'm going to start with you on this one. There's a couple of guys who I think that, I'll just speak for myself, like I expect something worse to come from what we saw this past year. And that's with Zach Gallen and Jacob DeGrom, who at one point or another, both of them had a quote, partial tear in something. And obviously Zach Gallen worked his way through it and continued to pitch the whole year. Jacob DeGrom happened toward the end of the season. And he was finally shut down by the Mets when, you know, the Mets meted and kicked themselves out of the playoff hunt. Do you have, when you hear about this in the season where it didn't end up being more than it could have been for either one of these guys, do you expect to see that other shoe drop the following year? And is that enough of a concern to push these guys pretty much off your draft board at what you expect to be their draft cost? Or are you willing to take that chance?
Unfortunately, it is if I'm drafting right now. I want to see something in the spring from both of these guys. I think I still have concerns with the workloads guys had in 2021 after the short 2020. I don't think this was just a one season thing. I think we're going to continue to see more injuries because of the time off in 2020. I think that's still a possibility. So if I'm drafting right now, guys that have, like you said, preliminary concerns already, I just can't do it. But I'm interested. I'm keeping an eye on him throughout the spring. And it was still September, maybe even August. We did like the first six rounds of a 2022 draft for pitcher list. And I had the fourth or fifth pick. At that time, DeGrom had just went on the IL. And I took him in the first round. And my remark was, if you believe like I do, that the most valuable fantasy player is the best starting pitcher. Right now, I still think that's Jacob DeGrom in 2022. But since then, I've done three or four other mocks or drafts, and I haven't touched him. He's been available in every draft I've been in.
Yeah, I've seen him in multiple other industry mocks as well, going in at the earliest was the second round, but I've seen him go in third and fourth round in a couple different mock situations as well. So Derek, I'm gonna ask you about a couple other, and feel free to chime in on Gallen or DeGrom if you want as well. But we've got three other pitchers on here. They're all starters. They're all very different though, and I want to get your take on the level of trust you might have in any of them pitching meaningful innings. And that is Steven Strasburg coming back next season. Mike Soroka, who the only one on this list that we're talking about that's not a direct arm injury or surgery, his ACL instead. And then obviously Justin Verlander, who I think we all expect him to be ready for the start of the season after his Tommy John, but I believe he's 39 years old. So I'm 39 years old too. I know I'm not doing anything if I have any kind of surgery for a long period of time. Obviously, Justin Verlander is in a different realm than myself and most other people. I'm also curious to see, as a free agent, what he ends up doing as far as if he gets a qualified offer from the Astros or if he ends up going somewhere else. But what's your level of trust on each one of these guys based on what they've done?
I think Strasburg and Soroka belong in a separate group. I feel so bad for Soroka. This guy has just, he's rehabbing from a ruptured Achilles, has a shoulder injury while he's recovering, and then re-ruptures his Achilles. And from what I've read, re-ruptured Achilles have worse outcomes than the initial injury, and they tend to have some long-term function. It affects long-term function more than that primary rupture does. That concerns me a lot, especially because Soroka's had shoulder issues off and on the last few years. So that's not great. Strasburg, it's something. And you feel he's another guy you just feel for. But you're talking, he's having lots of arm issues, and I just don't trust him. So he's just not a guy I'll draft. If I could know he'd be healthy, I'd be all in. He's been good, but I just worry that he may never be healthy. With Justin Verlander, I'm feeling okay. I think you just need to not expect him to just come back to where he was 2 years ago. We haven't seen him. I don't think he pitched in 2020. Like he basically got hurt before the season, and then we never saw him. You're talking 2 years. He's older. I think he's going to come back. I think he's going to pitch, and I wouldn't be shocked if he pitched a full season. I just think we need to not have expectations that he's going to be the last guy we saw or as good as we saw last time. Just real briefly on Jacob DeGrom, I will not draft Jacob DeGrom until we see him pitch in the spring. If he comes in the spring, he's healthy, he's pitching full effort, things like that, then yeah, I could see drafting him. I probably wouldn't love it, but I could see it. Zach Gallen, man, that guy just had a brutal season. It was a bunch of different stuff. The stress fracture in the arm. He has the UCL issue. They make a big deal about the fact that they think it's a different mechanism than if it were the Tommy John injury that you worry about, but it still happened. And then he has a hamstring strain that at the end of the season too. So he's a guy who I look at 2021 and maybe just wonder if it's a lost season, if it just, he just never got right. And that maybe in off season, he gets healthy. I'll take some chances on Zach Gallen, but I won't try and I don't want to be too overweight on that. Like just a little bit.
Yeah. From what I understand, Verlander had the surgery at the end of September last year during the season, but obviously he was out for the entirety of the season, just not pitching, just decided finally to get the surgery in the middle of the season. That's weird to say. End of September is the middle of a season. Hopefully we never have to say something like that again.
Yes, absolutely.
And I had Gallen in my dynasty, my home dynasty league, ended up trading him halfway through the season after hearing about the partial tear and dealing with other stuff, even though he was coming back. I think at that point I was just too worried about what could come and what may come down the line. I was able to get 90 cents on the dollar type of thing. And I was perfectly okay with that at that time. So it's probably what I would probably still recommend now if the hype goes up, but I'm also not a doctor, so I will not try to play one on the radio. Let's talk about a couple hitters. I'm going to move things along because I know Kevin wants to get to all the other fun stuff in Arizona that we can't do. We'll live vicariously through you, Kevin, the rest of the weekend, if that's okay. So one guy I do want to talk about, in that we talk about the injury prone, injury risk type of players, and I wonder if Alex Kirilloff is going to pretty much live in that bucket the rest of his career as somebody who has already had Tommy John surgery. And obviously there's a couple of notable positional players that have also have it. And they obviously come back a little bit earlier. Gleyber Torres comes to mind as well, but Kirilloff seems to get a new injury every year. Broke his wrist, I think 2 years ago, still in the minors. And now he's dealing with his current injury status with the Twins up in the major league. So Derek, do you see anything with Kirilloff to be concerned about having one of those injury prone labels this early in his career?
Yeah, you do worry, and you don't want to label a guy too before it it's really reasonable before it's fair. At this point, I think you could say maybe it's just a run of bad luck and that he's a guy who could get healthy. Thankfully, he should not on draft day. He's a guy who should be going in rounds late enough that you're not like, oh, this is a player that I just don't think is worth that draft day cost. I'm not overly concerned is what I would say. If he were a higher end player, if he were being, you know, drafted earlier, I would go, oh, I'm more concerned about Alex Kirilloff, and people might be overhyping the health.
Yeah, I think that's more than fair. Okay, we're going to take a short break, and we'll be right back with Derek Rhodes of Baseball Prospectus to talk more about some injury concerns and best ball draft results right after this.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
Kevin, in our mock draft, if I'm not mistaken, I don't have the draft board in front of me, but Ramon Laureano, who was obviously going to miss some time at the beginning of the season with his suspension, also had core surgery recently at the beginning of the offseason. And so that'll affect him going into next season whenever he does come back. And I think he's going to miss like the first 4 weeks, 3 or 4 weeks, based on the number of days, that 80-day suspension that he obviously already had some of it at the end of 2021. How much concern do you, he went in the last round, if I'm not mistaken, though, of that mock. That seemed a little late. Granted, I didn't even pick him, so obviously I didn't change that. And it's round 25 or so of this draft. Like, how much concern do you have with somebody like Laureano, who's obviously maybe benefited from the PEDs keeping him healthy? And now that he has had surgery, do you think not being on those PEDs is going to be enough of a concern to give him more of an injury concern going into next year?
Yeah, I think, like you said, he's going very late, but I still don't think I have interest. The thing that I think we forget about when we're talking PEDs, we all think Barry Bonds right away. But the thing about PEDs is recovery time. And what I wonder is, one, is he going to try to scoot under the radar while he's under suspension anyway to recover? Two, he had that aid in recovering in the past that now he doesn't have. So is it going to take him longer to recover from the injury? There are just multiple things there that, so I'm staying away.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Derek, have you noticed anything in the last couple of years as you've been doing this about that assumption? And I agree with you, Kevin. I think that we don't talk enough about the PEDs affecting recovery time rather than just performance. But have you noticed a correlation there with guys who have been suspended and then maybe they get injured later on? Or is that not a topic that you're putting you on the spot here? So I apologize.
But yeah, I haven't dug into that. I know that there's been multiple studies that have said players come back from PED don't tend to have downticks in performance. They tend to just continue. Now, that's not health. That's actual on-field performance. Part of the problem is you don't know how many guys aren't. I'm not saying they are or aren't. So it's doing studies like that is tough. It's a selection bias. You just get the guys that get caught. You don't know how much of that is all of it, if that's everybody or not. So I think I haven't done anything on it. You know, core surgery is a big deal. He's got plenty of time to recover. So I'm not particularly worried about the injury or anything like that. Whether he's worth the pick or not is another question.
Sure. All right, well, I'm going to jump up a little bit to all these first round guys that we touched on Tatis a little bit earlier. But Derek, I'm going to start with you. What concern do you have with Mike Trout possibly even having that injury prone tag connected to him moving forward? Tatis Jr. and his shoulder, obviously Acuna coming back from his surgery. He's already showing his Instagram working out and what have you. So you like to think that he's looking good, but whether or not he continues to run at the same clip that the Atlanta has allowed him to run in the past obviously has to come into question. You can let me know where these guys ended up going in your best ball draft. Acuna went second overall in our mock draft at Pitcher List. Tatis, like I said, I took third. I think Trout went ninth overall in that draft. So they're still first round guys from what I've been seeing. But what is your level of concern? The old adage goes like, you can't win your league in the first round, but you definitely can lose it. Are you worried about losing your league by putting all your eggs into one of these guys' baskets?
I'm nervous about all these guys. In our best ball that we did, Mike Trout went pick 14. He went number 14, and then Ronald Acuna Jr. went right after Mike Trout. They were all kind of right. Obviously, Tatis going 1-1. It's a little different, but the other guys are back in first round. So Trout, guys who have had calf injuries that have been this severe, have taken this long to recover, like, it's not a great list. In recent years, the list is guys who basically had issues predating and postdating that injury. So it's not a list that you want to see a guy like Mike Trout on. I'm obviously hopeful that, look, he missed a ton of time. He's got this whole offseason. They're going to get it figured out, and he's going to be back healthy to start the season. But I won't pretend I'm not concerned. I don't like seeing that he didn't. I don't not seeing him come back. And the fact that he was apparently very close for a very long time and never got over the hurdles, it just makes me wonder if there's still something going on, if you're dealing with some, maybe some scar tissue, something is, he's still dealing with it. He's trying to decide if he's going to have shoulder surgery. Him and the team are talking about that. Jeff Zimmerman posted something in his Minding the News column over on Fangraphs, some excerpts where Tatis Jr. just saying, hey, I'm not sure if we're going to do the surgery. I feel good. I feel strong. So she's certainly glad that he feels that way. But the surgery that they would be talking about is something that's helped design, stabilize, strengthen the shoulder so that it's not subluxation. So he's not having it pop out basically and having this subluxation all the time. He could maybe do that with some rehab too, you know, rest and rehab, and maybe he would have some, might cut down the risk on that next year. So I worry about that. The thing with Acuna, I don't worry about his recovery as far as like it happening. It's an ACL. It's a very common sports injury. The timeline is what I worry about. So I went back and looked at guys recovering from ACL injuries in recent years, and there's not been a guy who's come back for the start of the season on the timeline that he is in the majors. Now, there may have been some guys in the minors. I don't have that data. So maybe a younger guy, a recovery is not as big an issue. But Andrew McCutchen had surgery on 6-4 of 2019 and was going to miss the opening day of 2020. Alex Blandino is another guy. He had surgery in July of 2018, and he came back in June of 2019. So it took him a full year. I'm not saying that's what's going to happen with Ronald Acuna. It's good to hear that he's already being healthy. The reality is it's probably not going to be his decision. The team's going to do what they're comfortable with. When he does come back, you worry a little bit about the steals, but my guess is they won't bring him back until he's ready to be who he is as a player.
Yeah. And I wonder, Kevin, I'll ask you this, like, how can, if that's the case, right, Derek, where you're talking about it, like a player taking about a year or just about a year or just over a year to come back from that type of an injury, with how well Atlanta did without him, or at least how well they showed they could do without him. Yes, obviously they brought in new faces. They brought in Corey Soler. They brought in Rosario, et cetera, whatever. And they performed for the most part. Kevin, do you worry about Acuna missing extra time based on the fact that now Atlanta has shown what they can do without him? Maybe they can afford to hold him back longer at the start of the season. Thus, maybe fantasy teams are missing out on April Acuna. Is that something that you're thinking about in the first round?
Yeah, I absolutely think they have that luxury. There was a fascinating conversation last night here in Arizona. So a group of us standing around talking about Mike Trout and how concerned we are with this injury. And Ariel Cohen asked the handful of us standing there, if we're drafting right now, if you have to make the decision today, do you want Mike Trout or Teoscar Hernandez? All of us but one, after thinking about it, we were all upset. We hated it. But we're like, I have to take Hernandez right now, above Mike Trout, as crazy as that sounds. And but by the way, the only one that picked Trout was Nick Pollock.
Shout out to Nick.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really worried about this. I don't even know if it's a similar injury, Derek, but I have Josh Donaldson in my mind when I'm thinking about Mike Trout right now.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a similar injury, but he also had calf. He was one of the like short list of guys who had a calf injury that kept him out this long. Troy Tulowitzki, one of the other names on the list. So you don't want to be on a list with those guys. We talk about because they just have chronic issues. Now, Donaldson was relatively healthy this year, but they had to manage him. And
And it's been, what, 3 years now?
Yeah, you really hope that's not what we're seeing.
Significant plate appearances.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and when you have a team that has that kind of a contract with said player, like Donaldson and obviously like Trout, that's an investment. And obviously you have your insurance on those, sure, but at the same time, that you still made that investment in your team and in that player. You're not going to force the issue on your brand new toy, if you will, that you spent a lot of money on as an organization. So I would be a little bit worried in Trout's case as well. Of course, Acuna missing the beginning of the season, even though all his Instagram feeds show that he's perfectly fine, et cetera. And then obviously Tatis is a whole different animal because there has been no surgery. So there is, the timeline is more gray than I think anybody else could possibly put together on their own.
Yeah. If he doesn't have surgery, then the timeline is he's ready. Like, he's great. Like it's just a matter of whether or not the shoulder issues resurface next year.
All right. I think we hit on a couple. Obviously, there are a ton of other injuries and a ton will keep coming up. Make sure that you guys are listening. You're checking out all the great work that Derek is doing and you're just keeping tabs. Zimmerman's Mining the News that you just mentioned, Derek, is we will probably be quoting that every episode for the rest of the offseason. What he does over there at Fangraphs is an amazing piece of body of work. But let's talk about your guys' best ball draft that you just did. One of the earliest drafts that you on Twitter, and I'm sure there's a handful of them, obviously, but one of the earliest ones that, you know, we see draft boards for if you're in fantasy baseball Twitter. And so I'm curious to know your guys' general takeaways on how it went, things that you noticed, any strategy that you might have used. Kevin, I'm going to start with you. Like, what specific, did you have a strategy going in compared to what you did? And you draft early every season. So did you feel yourself going into this draft differently than you did, say, this time last year?
I did, because I what I found, and as anybody that has done best ball formats knows, that pitching is a premium in these the way the points work out. However, I found in my team's last season that I was lacking on the hitting side. So what I wanted to attempt to do was get some premium hitting that I'm confident is going to get me over 600 plate appearances, productive plate appearances, and then try to attack the pitching with depth. And I don't like how it turned out. So
let's clarify too.
Follow through on that plan, and I have some wild cards. I have all three of the big Tommy John guys that we have seen back in action at the end of this season: Chris Sale, Noah Syndergaard, Luis Severino. So there is a path for this team to work out, but I'm not real confident in all three of those guys performing.
So this was a league done on Fantrax, if I'm not mistaken, as well. Yep. We should clarify to our listeners who aren't aware, Fantrax best balls, especially for positional, for all players, but specifically for positional players, it is single position eligibility. So you have players that in normal roto leagues that might have two or three different positions you could throw them in at on any given day or week. Here, they're only going to be one position throughout the whole season, and pitchers are pitchers. It doesn't really matter. And these are weekly points formats as well, if I'm not mistaken, guys, right?
Yeah, weekly points, and it favors, it includes quality starts. You get points for quality starts. It also bumps up OBP guys and to some extent discounts stolen base guys. It's certainly not as valuable as Roto for stolen base guys. So some of the guys might go later than what you would expect. But Kevin, yeah, I think at least in general, my strategy with these type of leagues is I want to get one or two pitches early, but then I really like to hit hitting and then start filling in my pitching staff. Sometimes I think people think, well, hey, pitching's really important for this format, and they lean too heavy into it, and they'll go three or four or five pitchers straight. And you can do that, but you have to hit on the hitters. And I don't like to have that much pressure on me to hit on the hitters. I think it's easier to get late pitching. So I want a little bit of top heavy and then really start hitting hitters, and then I start filling in my pitching.
Yeah, I think the tendency, the things you're hearing too around the industry is that pitching is a lot deeper this year going into drafts than it was at the beginning of last year. Now, of course, obviously going into last year, we were in a whole different ball game coming off the shortened season, but you're hearing that a lot. So I wouldn't be surprised to see people thinking or feeling they can go into drafts thinking they can get pitching later. This is something Nick Pollock always talks about. I think we had a game of chicken during our mock draft, Kevin, who would finally take a pitcher. And finally, I think it was Steve Giuselli over at Wins Above Fantasy finally took a pitcher, his first pitcher in the eighth round, I think. So that was pretty impressive. But that being said, Derek, like besides strategy, did you notice anything in this draft, not only things that you did, but like the rest of your league mates as a general theme, or like certain types of players that went later than you expected or went heavy on early?
I looked at the ADP from 2021 and only four of the top 12 guys drafted in 2021 went in the first round in this draft. So I think that was the big thing I noticed, is like a lot of turnover at the top. Now, some of that is because Mike Trout and Ronald Acuna Jr. both slip out of the first round just barely. That could change. They might settle in as first round players. But the pitching, the names at pitching at the top, like the guys who, like the first 10 pitchers. So Walker Buehler, Garrett Cole, they go one. They're the first two pitchers off the board. Okay. Corbin Burns jumps up there. He had a great year. That makes sense. Max Scherzer, first round pick. Zach Wheeler, first round starting pitcher. Robbie Ray is a new name up there. Kevin Gausman, a new name up there. Seeing guys like Julio Urias, Freddie Peralta, Sandy Alcantara, like these guys going in the third round in this format, when these guys were all like, Freddie was a 300 pick. Julio was maybe in the early 10 to 12 round, something like that. And Sandy Alcantara was maybe a top 100 guy. So a lot of turnover at the top that kind of just, I knew it mentally, but then you look at it and you're like, wow, I'm not used to seeing these guys here.
Yeah. I felt bad. Not even feel bad, but like seeing Robbie Ray go so early is just, it breaks my heart, because I had him in every league last year at pick 250 or thereabouts.
Yeah, right.
And to see now that I've got to spend up a second round pick in most drafts going into this year, I'll probably still do it. I've just had this soft spot for Robbie Ray for longer than I should have probably, but it, you know, worked out last year in that respect.
Seeing him go ahead of Shane Bieber, Nola, Lucas Giolito. It's a little wild, and I don't blame people. Like, I don't look at it and go that it was a bad move. It's just, see that for the first time, you're like, man, I guess this is the pitching. Like, the hitting landscape did not change anywhere near as much as the pitching landscape did, in my opinion.
I'm sure. You know, Kevin, did you notice from the hitting side, did you notice any? I'm assuming we had guys like Cedric Mullins and even maybe Jesse Winker going up higher than they were at the end of last year. But is there anybody on the hitting side that you noticed either a lot more turnover or certain positions, especially in a Fantrax league? Like I mentioned, they have to be single position. Is there a position that stood out more than others throughout the course of the draft?
Yeah, outfield dries up quickly.
Very quickly.
What I'm trying to say. I couldn't just spit it out. The outfield dries up quickly. Of course, the superstars go really early. The Soto and Betts, Tucker, Trout and Acuna, still early second round. And quite a few guys towards the middle rounds. Mitch Haniger all the way up to the sixth round. You hitting
that 40 was me. Plus,
I'll do that. But when you get down to just the 15th round, I already took Ian Happ there. Mark Canha, Mike Yastrzemski, who didn't have a very good year. We're only in the 15th round, and those are the outfielders getting drafted.
Yep.
Outfield dries up quick.
So it's a little late in the game. I should have clarified. Is it a 12-team or 15-team league?
12-team.
12-team league, five outfield. Thank you. And then middle infield, corner infield, the slots, or is it just every position?
Three utilities is the way they do it. Yeah.
Got it. So I wonder if the outfield dries up for whatever other reason, or is it more of a specifically because you've got guys that have first base outfield eligibility in normal leagues, no longer have the outfield eligibility. Like a Gavin Lux, I'm assuming is second base. He's not outfield eligible in this format. Or Tatis, he's probably not outfield eligible here, but he'll have outfield eligibility in most other places. Kevin, do you feel like that was the case, or is it just that position itself is not as deep as it maybe it once was?
Yeah, both. I think it's both. And some of the guys we've talked about with injury concerns, and I think there's, several factors play into it. And especially the guys, you know, it's not just Tampa anymore. We saw the Giants do it this year. There's so many matchups being played and platooning going on, particularly with outfielders, it seems like to me. So full-time outfielders are getting snatched up quickly.
Like three of the best teams, three playoff teams this year, basically just run a train of different guys through their outfield. You don't want to draft any of them. The Giants, Astros, and the Rays. It's like, I don't feel great about any of these guys.
Absolutely.
So I'm gonna end it on this one. I'm gonna ask you guys the same question and get your guys' take. Like, Derek, I'll start with you. You know, what based on what you saw here in this, and like you said, you haven't done a draft yet, another draft on top of this yet, but obviously you'll do a couple more before it's all said and done. What changes do you expect to see, or differences do you expect to see as we get closer to March drafts or even February drafts from what you saw in this draft, that whatever you saw in this draft was like, whoa, I can't imagine this going the way it went come March when there's more information or players have gone through spring training. We just know more.
I think the pitching will shake up a lot. I think that, at least I felt like as we were going through draft, I was like, oh, that guy should have been drafted. Oh, that guy should have been drafted. There was this moment where especially a lot of guys who maybe were good players but had down years, I think they'll bubble back up. And some of these guys who had a really good couple months maybe will fall down a little bit. Not a lot, but I just think they'll swap places. It's hard when you're not drafting with ADP that you have to know, and there's no projection system. So until any of that comes out, you're just going off of what you think or your gut valuations, or a lot of it is a little bit more off of last year, what just happened. We're creatures of recency. We can't, it's hard to avoid that. So I think we'll see the pitchers, some of these pitchers fall down a little bit, and some of the older pitchers who maybe just had a little bit of a rough season will come up a little bit.
Yeah, I think that what you nailed it. Like, you have no ADP. We talked about this in the offseason. Kevin, you and I talked about this, about you should be ignoring ADP anyway. If you want to get,
right?
Yeah, but we never do. No, because you want to get the right value. Yep. You're like, oh, I see this guy as a 10th round pick, but he's not going until the 14th round. I'm not going to spend a 10th round pick. I'll wait at least maybe 11th or 12th. Maybe I'll even stretch out to the 14th. But here, you don't have that. You have to know who you want, when you want them, and how you compare them to other players. And you have to trust yourself, honestly. You just have to be like, I don't care if this seems weird. This is what I want. This is the guy I think is going to be the best for my team based on what you've built so far as well. Kevin, is there anything specifically, maybe not specifically the pitchers, but like any other things that you noticed that you think is going to change drastically come March?
I think what I learned, what we just talked about, with how quickly the outfield dries up, I think that's going to start to drive some of these players. The list earlier, I think in the past we've thought as outfield being really deep. I thought it was. I used to do the outfielder profiles for a draft guide. So I would look at 150 outfielders and write a blurb on them. I felt comfortable waiting on outfield. I don't anymore, and I don't think I'm going to be the only one. I think the outfielders are going to move up.
I can totally see that, it's specifically too in a five outfield format as well, like NFBC and what have you. I'll be interested to see if that holds up, Kevin, in your standard Yahoo ESPN leagues that have three outfielders, one utility, or even only two utility spots, especially with players that have added outfield eligibility, like the aforementioned Tatis and Gavin Lux and what have you, from two ends of the spectrum. I'll be curious to see if that kind of holds up in that same respect in those formats. But I can totally see what you're saying in formats that we talk about a lot on the show. That's the five outfield plus the utility spots. And I think a lot of people just expect also to see either a UT only or an outfielder in that utility spot a lot of the times. And to your point, I think that's probably not going to be the case going into next year. Derek, thank you so much. Is there anything else, like of everything we've talked about so far, that we didn't hit on, whether it be your injury work or what happened in this draft, in this best ball draft, that you think is worth like diving into just on a little like soapbox, if you will, or anything you want to add in to anything we talked about today to put a bow on it, or anything we should have talked about that we didn't talk about?
Nothing I can think of. I think keep an eye on the next 30 to 40 days. We're going to see a lot of updates about what players, how they were doing this year. If somebody was playing through an injury, somebody's going to get an off season surgery. I think that's stuff that sometimes can slide under the radar because we're all taking a little bit of a break, but now is a good time when we do see a lot of updates on players. So something to keep an eye out. Read Jeff Zimmerman's Minding the News. I don't work for Fangraphs. I don't work for Jeff, but I will plug that. I'll try and share them on my timelines as I see stuff that's interesting. If you need help with off-season injury research, we have stuff that we have tools over at Baseball Prospectus to do that. One that I do like, and Mike Trout, I'll just bring this up with Mike Trout. Sometimes teams will say, hey, here's an injury. it's going to take two to four months or 2 to 4 weeks or 3 to 4 weeks, whatever. And it's helpful to sometimes be able to look back and go, what has that actually been like for people who've had that injuries? And sometimes you catch the teams being incredibly optimistic when in reality, it's going to take a lot longer. So we've got some tools over at Baseball Prospectus that we just released to help with that called the recovery timeline. So that's the only plug I'll do there, but follow me on Twitter. I share injury stuff. I share best ball stuff. I try to separate them in case you're only interested in one. I appreciate you guys having me on. This has been a blast.
Thanks, Derek. Yeah, I really appreciate you coming on as well. Kevin, what are you looking forward to the most after we hang up here to do? You have an auction coming up in an hour or so, right?
Yeah. I wasn't going to do one of the drafts here this season, but that I realized I love auctions and I prefer auctions. And we have the best balls. We have the Draft Champions League start up early, but this is really my only opportunity to do an auction this early in this draft, early in draft season, yeah. Way before draft season,
preseason.
So yeah. I did go ahead and jump in, and yeah, looking forward to that for a few hours this afternoon. I believe Jeff Erickson is our auctioneer, and I hear
he keeps it
moving along.
Yes, that's what I've heard.
I hear he gets it done in about 3 hours, so that's nice too.
Nice. So you can catch a game later on tonight as well.
Absolutely.
All right. Awesome. Well, that's going to do it for this, our first preseason, if you will, post preseason episode of On the Wire. We have a lot to talk about throughout the offseason as we lead up through the new year and into the launch of PL7 in February and into, you know, the heart of draft season in March and in April, the regular season starts. So if there's a topic you want us to discuss throughout the off season, let us know. You can email us at onthewirepod@gmail.com. You can shoot us a DM on Twitter @onthewirepod. And of course, you should be joining PL Plus in the off season. You'll have pre-access to the PL7 that we'll be putting out in beta form for our PL Plus members ahead of time. So you'll get to see all the cool stuff that's coming out there early. So go over to pitcherlist.com and join us there. And you can join us in the Discord as well, where you can, you know, pick the brains of Kevin, myself, and everybody else that's in that chat, just talking baseball, whether or not there's baseball played or not. It doesn't matter. It's an amazing time. And if you haven't noticed as well, PitcherList is hiring, our annual hiring frenzy, if you will. A lot of positions open. They're all paid. They're all remote. So check that out as well. And how I joined PitcherList was on a whim. I sent in about 2 years ago to the day, sent in an application, and it's been a blast ever since. So definitely check that out if you have any interest whatsoever. Again, I'm going to thank Derek Rhodes for joining us on this episode. You should be following him on Twitter as well as checking out his work over at Baseball Prospectus, as he mentioned. You'll see links to all that stuff in the show description. So if you've made it through all this far, you'll know to just check that out and click the links for direct access. That's going to do it for this week's On the Wire. We'll be putting out episodes throughout the offseason every other week. You can check us out wherever you're listening to this podcast. Make sure you subscribe and give us a rating or review whenever possible. You can follow myself on the Twitter @80grade. It's all spelled out. Kevin is @HastingKevin. And make sure to follow @PitcherListPods to get updates about every new episode of every PitcherList podcast network show and give them all a listen. We wish you the best of luck in all of your drafts, whether you're drafting now or you're waiting until March. And when the season starts, you win every single bid, as we talk about FAB, by just $1. Thanks once again to Derek Rhodes for joining us. And on behalf of Kevin Hastings, I am Adam Howe. With that, we bid you goodbye.